It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Well, I wouldn't call it a crapshoot, but it is one of the less predictable aspects of doing divorce work, because the amount of money that you get is really a function of the discretion of the judge, and the term may not be so questionable if it's a long-term marriage, but you never know what the future is going to bring about change in circumstance.
Private attorney Ed Barnes, a partner at Barnes & Deal, discusses the many factors courts must take into consideration when weighing questions of spousal support, whether short-term or long-term. And during this week's question and answer session, we talk about how child support gets set and what you need to do as soon as you know you can't pay as ordered. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 161, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. Last week, at the steps of the U.S. Supreme Court, three Virginians helped by Medicaid addressed a crowd on the need to protect the Medicaid expansion in the Affordable Care Act. Eric and Linda Christensen of Arlington became temporary legal guardians of their 14-year-old granddaughter after the girl's parents lost their jobs and were unable to care for her. The Christensen's health plan would not allow them to cover their granddaughter. Fortunately, the family was able to get the help she needed through Medicaid, and today she is thriving as a high school sophomore. Theodore Method, a military veteran and retired postal worker from Alexandria, shared his story on how Medicaid has helped his wife, who has Alzheimer's disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, and congestive heart failure. If his wife's Medicaid benefits were cut, Theodore would have to exhaust his own retirement funds to maintain his wife's standard of care and would quickly run out of resources for both of them. Although Virginia was recently touted as the number one state to earn a living, it has the shameful distinction of being 48th in Medicaid spending. Medicaid is frequently on the state chopping block, sustaining millions in budget cuts. In other news, for the second year in a row, a large majority of the Richmond City Council have pledged support for the Affordable Housing Trust Fund, but in a very different manner. Last year, 6 out of 9 City Council members attended the annual Nehemiah Action of RISC, Richmonders Involved to Strengthen Our Community, and promised to appoint the Affordable Housing Trust Fund Oversight Board, instruct the board to recommend $3 million in annual funding, and focus half the fund on the poorest third of the community. In the ensuing year, nothing was done, just as nothing has been done since City Council set up the fund in 2008. Last week, a large majority of the Richmond City Council again promised to appoint, to look for funding, and to focus on the neediest, but did so in absentia. 7 out of 9 City Council members made these commitments, but only in private. Only one city council member, Marty Jewell, attended the Nehemiah Action, and he also promised support. But RISC has heard these promises before and has vowed to hold city council accountable. RISC plans to attend every city council meeting in April and beyond to hold the members accountable until they simply do what they have promised, implement their own law. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's case that changed the Commonwealth is Calvin versus Calvin. Brian and Elizabeth Calvin married in 1986 and separated in 1994. She filed for divorce on grounds of desertion, and he filed a cross bill alleging adultery. The divorce was granted due to the wife's adultery, but she also was awarded spousal support, or alimony, of $300 per month for 3 years, and the husband appealed. The Court of Appeals observed that the wife's health had deteriorated, she required continued medical treatment, had no health insurance, and had been almost wholly supported by her husband during the marriage. The court ruled that although adultery precludes permanent spousal support, this limitation is not absolute, and despite a finding of adultery, a court may award spousal support if there is clear and convincing evidence that a denial of such support would constitute a manifest injustice. This has been the law ever since. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and Calvin versus Calvin is this week's Case That Changed the Commonwealth.
You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here in the studio, and it's time once again for our weekly question and answer. We're here with this week's questioner. Please tell us your name and where you're from.
Hi, my name is Wooly, and I'm from Henrico County.
Welcome to the show, Wooly. What question do we have this week?
I'd like to know, how can I let my child support agency know about me losing a position and changing that with back child support?
I have a follow-up question or two. Was your child support established by a court, like by a juvenile and domestic relations court, or was it established by an agency like the Division of Child Support Enforcement?
Yes, the Division of Child Support Enforcement.
Okay. Well, whether it was established by a court or by an agency like the Division of Child Support Enforcement, once child support has been ordered and goes unpaid for 30 days, it becomes a judgment by operation of law and cannot be changed retroactively, which is why it is really important, whether it's court-ordered child support or agency-ordered child support, if you're unable to pay it, it's super important to request a modification downward in writing as soon as you know that you need that downward modification. If it's court-ordered child support, you go back to the court that ordered the child support and you file what's called a motion to amend or review. And once that's filed, the child support that becomes due after that date can be modified downward based on your income as well as the other parent's income and how many children are being supported. The same is basically true for the Division of Child Support Enforcement. They don't have a convenient form like a motion to amend or review, but I would contact the Division of Child Support Enforcement. I would do that both orally and in writing, and I would save a copy of whatever you mail to them. If you fax them, then I would save the fax verification and lay out your circumstances that you are requesting a downward modification in child support because of your financial circumstances. And I would be persistent. I wouldn't wait more than a couple of weeks without getting a response for them. And if didn't get a response, I would do a follow-up. And you may even want to make an in-person visit to the Division of Child Support Enforcement, whichever agency, whichever local office is actually handling your case, and request the paperwork to fill out a downward modification. And they will ask for your current income, and presumably they will get the current income of the party who has the children, in run the guidelines to determine how much child support you actually should be paying. But documenting all this is super important because, again, if you don't make the request, the unpaid child support becomes a judgment by operation of law after it's unpaid for 30 days, and then it can never be changed retroactively. You have really no choice but to pay it. Is this information helpful to you?
Very helpful. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for being on the show. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the law offices of Barnes & Deal in Chesterfield County, across from the Chesterfield County Courthouse, and we're speaking with one of the partners, Ed Barnes, and we will be talking today about spousal support, or alimony, as formerly known. Welcome to the show, Ed.
Thank you very much.
Ed, will you first of all tell our listeners exactly what is spousal support?
Spousal support was originally defined by common law as the amount of money that a payor spouse pays to a recipient spouse for their support. This has nothing to do with child support. It is for the spouse's support only.
Now, of course, child support is automatically owed from a parent to a child, but I gather that's not the same with spousal support. Could you elaborate on that?
Well, you start off with the analysis of spouse support is receivable by the recipient spouse, but it can be barred. It can be barred by fault grounds such as adultery. And there are exceptions to that bar. And let's say that you have a case where the one spouse has been guilty of adultery and they're still seeking spouse support. They might seek it saying, well, even though I have committed adultery, it would be manifestly unjust to not give me alimony. And if the court finds it would be manifestly unjust, the court can still give that party alimony.
And is that a change in the law or the interpretation of the law? Because I thought in past years there could be absolute bars to spousal support no matter what.
Well, the particular case I'm talking to you about is a case that my firm actually handled in the Supreme Court. And that is when this manifest injustice began. And I think you're correct. Prior to about 1999, that was the law. I think this has been a change.
So how does the judge decide, first of all, who gets spousal support or whether it should be awarded at all?
Well, spouse support, until the passage of 20-107.1, was set by common law. And there really were no particular guidelines. Now 20-107.1 sets a standard for alimony. And generally, without going into the details of the factors, generally if one spouse makes more money than the other, then that spouse may have to pay the other spouse support. And the amount of the difference in their incomes may set the amount.
How is that amount set? Like in the child support context, there are child support guidelines or worksheets. And I understand until recently a formula didn't exist in spousal support, but that's also changed in recent years.
The original guideline for spouse support was in Fairfax County, but it only applied to Fairfax County. Now there are guidelines for Richmond, and I was on the committee that set those guidelines. Those guidelines are a guide only. They are not a formula for the setting of spouse support, and they only apply to temporary support. They do not apply to permanent support.
Well, would you tell our listeners the difference between temporary support and permanent support?
When a lawsuit first starts for divorce or a case starts in the juvenile court for spouse support, the court will initially make an order regarding temporary or pendent illiti support to hold things over until there can be a full hearing. That particular amount of support is what is set by these guidelines. Once the court gets to a full hearing regarding the setting or establishing permanent spousal support, then those guidelines no longer apply.
So in that situation, when the guidelines no longer apply, what does the judge look at then? Are there a series of factors that the judge is supposed to look at in order to determine the permanent spousal support as opposed to this temporary or pendente light spousal support?
In practice, both parties will submit what's called an income and expense exhibit, and that will show what their income is. It will also show what their expenses are each month. And you'll subtract expenses from income to see what they have available for paying spouse support. Now, the factors other than that are in 20-107.3, and they have to do with the standard of living established during the marriage. They have to do with the duration of the marriage. They have to do with the physical and mental condition of the parties. They have to do with the extent to which the parties had a certain living arrangement during the marriage. And they have to do with the contributions the parties made to support by each other during the marriage. And the court looks at all those and comes up with what is a fair amount to be paid by the payor spouse to the payee spouse.
So how do those factors interact with each other? For example, you mentioned one of the factors is how the marital property gets divided. Is it fair to say that if one party gets more marital property than the other, then they might have to pay more spousal support?
Well, no. What actually happens is if one party gets more property than the other and that property produces income, that income they get will be applied towards their living expenses and therefore could reduce the amount of support that the payor spouse pays. So you look at the general picture financially of the parties and you weigh that against their needs to support themselves.
Now, do people need to file a divorce to get spousal support, or are they allowed to just separate and get spousal support that way?
The answer is they can separate and get spouse support by filing a petition for spouse support in the juvenile court. It does not require a divorce proceeding to do that.
And which is generally the better way to proceed, on doing it in the juvenile court on a petition for spousal support and doing the divorce later? Or is it better to do it all in one proceeding in the divorce? Or is that just too general a question to really be fairly answered?
Well, it's a very good question, actually, because we make those determinations on a regular basis, and we make them based on the following. How quickly do we need to get support started? And sometimes we'll look at whether the juvenile court can hear us sooner than the circuit court can. Secondly, you may not have grounds for divorce, but you still need alimony. So you go to the juvenile court. Thirdly, there may be a situation where the parties can't afford the expense of a circuit court case. And so until they can, you might want to bridge the gap in the juvenile court and get support there.
Now, another of the factors that you mentioned is the duration of the marriage. And a lot of people may believe that, well, if it was a short-term marriage, I'm probably not entitled to spousal support at all. Is that reality or is that a myth?
That is overstating the case and oversimplifying it a little bit. If the marriage is 3 or 4 years, but the wife became disabled during that time, spouse support may be very appropriate. If the marriage was short-term and both parties were healthy, then the alimony may be an amount of money to rehabilitate the spouse, but it may only last for a short period of time. So the amount of time that spouse support is paid may be reduced by the fact that the marriage was short.
And you mentioned that spousal support can be rehabilitative, it can be short-term, it can be long-term. Can you go into that in a little more detail and tell us what the judge is going to look at in determining whether spousal support is going to be short-term and limited or going to essentially be open-ended?
We'll start with the definition of spouse support is an amount of money paid to one party by the other party until the party receiving the money remarries, dies, or cohabits with somebody in a relationship analogous to marriage for a period of 1 year. So if you're receiving spouse support and you get remarried, it stops. If you die, it stops. And if the person paying you dies, it stops. And if you start living with somebody in a relationship analogous to marriage, you run the risk that it will stop. So that's the basic definition of spouse support. Now, in negotiations, spouse support negotiations are usually about amount and duration. You know, we might be willing to pay you $10,000 a month for 1 month or $1,000 a month for 10 months. But in all these cases, if the judge makes a decision about spouse support, it can always be modified based on a material change of circumstance in the future. If the alimony is set by agreement of the parties and does not provide for modification, then the alimony will go until forever with no modification for change of circumstances. So you have to be very careful about how the alimony is set so you don't get stuck with some open-ended, really long-term obligation.
But I gather that that material change has to be something that occurred since the last order was entered?
In fact, that is the absolute ironclad rule. Any change in circumstance must have occurred subsequent to the entry of the last order.
So is there any way for someone to really predict whether they're going to get spousal support? And if so, how much? Or is that something that is more or less a crapshoot?
Well, I wouldn't call it a crapshoot, but it is one of the less predictable aspects of doing divorce work, because the amount of money that you get is really a function of the discretion of the judge, and the term may not be so questionable if it's a long-term marriage, but you never know what the future is going to bring about change of circumstance. So I had a case where we went in for appendicitis support and got zero. We went back again and got zero. We went back for a permanent hearing and we got $2,000 a month for 15 years. So you never can quite tell.
A lot of people think that if they live with someone for a long period of time, and as you say, a relationship analogous to marriage, that when they break up, that they can seek some support from their partner. What is the law really in Virginia?
They cannot in Virginia. There is no palimony or there is no support obligation by two parties who just live together. You must be married. In other words, a trigger or basis for alimony is the fact you are married. So you can't do a palimony case in Virginia.
And I gather Virginia does not recognize what some other states call common law marriage, that if you live together for a period of time, 5 years, 7 years, whatever, you're considered married by common law, and then when you separate, you'd be entitled to all the benefits of married people.
Virginia is not a common law state. The District of Columbia is, South Carolina is, but Virginia is not. Now, I did have a case where the parties had lived together for a period of time in South Carolina. Then they moved to Virginia. They never got married, but we were able to show they were married in South Carolina, and that continued until they came to Virginia.
So, in other words, Virginia would respect a common law marriage that really became a common law marriage in another state, but not if they lived together in the Commonwealth of Virginia to try to establish that common law relationship.
That is correct. Full faith and credit got them recognition of the South Carolina marriage.
Well, that is interesting. And we have been speaking with Ed Barnes. He is a partner at the law firm of Barnes & Deal in Chesterfield County, across from the Chesterfield County Courthouse. We have been talking about spousal support. Thank you so much for being on the show, Ed.
It has been my pleasure.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's Strange But True Law is from Title 51.5, which deals with persons with disabilities. Code of Virginia Section 51.5-102 provides that no goods may be displayed, advertised, offered for sale, or sold in this Commonwealth upon a representation that the goods are made by blind persons. Unless the goods are identified as such by label, imprint, stamp, or symbol. This makes sense, but the next sentence provides that no such goods may be so identified unless at least 75% of the total hours of direct labor of producing the goods shall have been performed by a blind person or persons. So, in this context, blind really means 75% blind. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and that's this week's Strange But True Law.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral for, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. The National Mortgage Settlement is the largest monetary settlement since the 1998 tobacco settlement. But who is eligible for what relief? Join us next week when consumer attorney Jay Spear, executive director of the Virginia Poverty Law Center, discusses the specifics of the settlement and why relief still may be hard to come by. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.